This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, and this is the Wells Tech Podcast, episode 419 for Tuesday, November 17th, 2015. You're doing a little show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And we do this each and every week. In fact, we've done it for 419 or so weeks. And we've usually done it, just me and a gal named Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to join you today. My calendar agrees with yours. I've got the Rubik's Cube thing going on, and it says Tuesday, November 17th. Every time you say what date it is, I glance down to see how with it I am. And today I was pretty with it, and I got the Rubik's Cube perpetual calendar on the right
date. Have you had that for the entire seven or so years we've done this? And this is the first time you've shared it?
I guess I have. It's a throwback. You know, Rubik's Cubes came out back in the day. I was in high school. I don't know if you remember when they were first popular. Mm-hmm. But I bought a book, and I learned how to solve it, and I memorized how to solve it. And it's been with me ever since. So that's
Does that help you with a real Rubik's Cube? Is that practice?
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah. I got them sitting here, too. I've got a 3x3 and a 2x2. Yikes. So fun stuff.
I know we had it around. I remember my brother taking it apart and cheating to solve it, you know, gluing the right colors on the right squares.
Yeah, and I have a vinyl cutting machine now, so I could actually cut vinyl to put on the squares too, but I don't cheat. I do it the real way.
Yeah.
I even have a 4x4 one, and I bought a book and solved it. It's a lot more complex though, but
good to keep that brain active.
There you go.
Speaking of being active, we had a community that was pretty active with providing us some good information for today's show. This is the second month in a row now, and we'll try to make this a regular occurrence where we devote an entire show predominantly to going through community feedback. So not that we won't take feedback throughout the entire month. In fact, we encourage it throughout the entire month, but we really focus on it and kind of bring it up on this show and kind of have a feedback show. This month, we had it a little bit of a wrinkle. I called it Look Both Ways. It's just a little kind of fun segment that we're starting where maybe we ask an intriguing question, kind of a discussion starter kind of session, maybe our own little exercise, like a Rubik's Cube exercise, where we're getting people to think about how to solve particular problems. And in this question for this month, I thought, well, I'd love to know how people are solving the problem of distance communication and distance learning using things like video conferencing, Google Hangouts, Skype, other things that are useful for ministry. So we threw out the question out there on our listserv and in other social networking type places and got some great feedback. So maybe that's as good a place to start as any with our Look Both Ways section and how people are using video conferencing in ministry.
And maybe just a word of explanation. The concept behind Look Both Ways is that, as we often say here on Wells Tech, we kind of sit at the intersection of technology and ministry. And when you go to intersections, you want to look both ways and make sure you're aware of the things around you at the intersection. And that's what we're trying to do, focusing on video conferencing this month and all the things around that concept. And we got some varied responses, Martin. I think very good ideas for those of you that aren't using video conferencing tools like we use here on Wells Tech, like Google Hangouts or video chatting with Skype or whatever it may be. There are definitely ministry and education applications. And one that actually didn't get submitted, I'll have to scold Rachel Pearson for this. I noticed on Rachel Pearson's maybe her Facebook page, that she had a mystery Skype event with another classroom. So she's teaching in a fourth grade setting, doing technology enhancement type things in a school district here in Minnesota. And they actually Skyped with a classroom, I think it was in Utah, and tried to figure out where they were located. Each group didn't know where the other group was located, and they gave clues and learned about what it was like to be from a different part of the country. So there's an education example of using a Skype or Google Hangout type thing to connect classrooms. And I think that if you look on the web, you can find kind of clearinghouses where teachers can make connections with teachers from around the world, even to do those kind of mystery Skype.
We talked about that maybe 6 months ago or so. I think it's Skype in the classroom or Skype in education. There's a whole website devoted to kind of making those connections and just making it easy for classes to go beyond their four walls and beyond their borders and maybe even beyond their continent. You know, to connect with all kinds of either other classrooms or other very interesting people who have said, yeah, I could be a resource. So, yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer, I would think, in some scenarios in some classrooms. So,
good. Yeah, I've seen it done on a large scale at the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, where they've interviewed, I think it was Dr. John Lorenz at the time. He was in Ukraine. This was years ago. And they projected him, his Skype call, up on the screen. So everybody in the big gymnasium/auditorium could be part of the Skype call. So, you know, one-to-one classrooms or one-to-many settings as well. Recently here at MLC, they use Skype for World Missionary preached a sermon for one of the MLC chapels on World Mission.
Oh, really? Right. So the kind of normal chapel, yet the video, the devotion itself was led by a world missionary.
Yeah. So you don't just have to worry or coordinate your schedule around when they're in the United States and willing to come speak at your congregation or for your school. You can actually connect with them distance-wise. And I'm sure our Missions Promotion Center would be happy to help you make those connections as
well. Yeah, I think that would be a nice concept for a Bible study or Bible class as well.
Definitely.
Where you have a little bit more of fudge room. Sometimes there's a nervousness about, you know, getting the connection right and, you know, making sure everything's okay. Maybe kind of a Bible class setting is a kind of a lower pressure scenario where that could be really beneficial. So
here at MLC, they actually had the missionary record his sermon, and they had that as the backup plan.
Yeah, good idea.
If the live stream didn't work, but the live stream did work, and I think it was very effective and well received. So, good. You know, I'm totally off script. We've got this long list of community feedback, and I threw you with a whole bunch of curveballs there.
That leads nicely into some of these other pieces of feedback we got on our Look Both Ways question. One that I knew about, and I think it's been a real blessing to those people that have used it, is distance counseling. Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service. Actually, those are the initials still, but I think they call themselves something else. I'd have to look on their website. But
yeah, here's their website here. It's called Christian Family Solutions, and you can get to it at christianfamilysolutions.org.
All right, I'll have to try and commit that one to memory now. But anyway, Dan Numanson, who works there at WLCFS, said, great topic. Video conferencing has been an amazing blessing to our organization as we now provide a wide array of counseling services to Wells and Ells members around the world. Members love the convenience of meeting right from home during the day or evening. We've provided services for individuals, couples, families. We've also provided online support groups and provided a support group leader by video for congregations to help facilitate their group. They don't use Skype or Google Hangouts, mostly because of HIPAA requirements. They use VC, which I explored a long time ago before Google Hangouts was even around. So it does have some applications still today.
Yep, and we heard from a couple of school settings in particular. Drew Willems wrote to us from Shoreland Lutheran High School and Marin McPeak from St. Mark's, and you'll remember what city in California, Martin, right?
Citrus Heights, I believe.
Citrus Heights, that's right. And both of them talked about the counseling services being available in their school and church settings. So it's not just individuals, you know, connecting with Christian Family Solutions, but it's also connecting corporately for your congregation or school, and just being aware of the fact that that service exists and guiding people to it is a big benefit.
Yep. Another natural, which I thought we'd hear back from a couple pastors, Joel Ponco, Rob Gunther, who talked about getting pastors together for circuit meetings. Pastor Gunther wrote, our circuit meets once a week for Google Plus Hangouts. You know, so that absolutely wouldn't be possible, even if your congregations are close together. They're miles and miles apart up there in Alaska. Tuesdays at 2 o'clock, and they discuss text from the pericope for that a majority of them are working on for that series, for that Sunday. Often, he says, we digress from the text to discuss questions of casuistry or just try to encourage each other. It's been a big blessing in our circuit. I've also used Hangouts to bring a committee member into a meeting who couldn't make it from home due to icy roads or other commitments. So lots of applications in lots of different scenarios and environments.
And you know, that's easy to do. We do it in front of our computers every week, Martin, but you can also do these things on a mobile device. So if someone were traveling, that's like a key committee member or a pastor that you want to connect with or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be that they have to be at their tethered device or whatever. They can be right there on their phones joining these meetings. Yep. So pretty convenient.
So I've talked about counseling. We've talked about Bible study, circuit meetings, meetings in general. Another kind of angle on counseling, this one maybe not conducted by Child Family Service, but premarital counseling by a local pastor. Both Frank Italiano and Steve Daly mentioned that. Steve wrote, like Frank, I have done something similar. I've used Google Hangouts for pre-marriage counseling. I've also used it to teach catechism. I like Hangouts for catechism because I can share my screen with the person that I'm teaching so they can take notes off of the presentation. With both pre-marriage counseling and catechism, I have emailed the handout in advance in PDF. He goes on to talk about, well, face-to-face is better, but, you know, this beats not meeting at all or infrequent meetings and can kind of keep people up to speed. So, it, you know, for premarriage counseling, sometimes you have a deadline, like the wedding. So, so he's using this effectively there. And I guess I would agree to try and make sure that you do have to do a little more preparation, I think, when you do video conferencing, get those handouts early, get people, get them in their hands so they can review them. But that can be done with lots of different technologies as well.
Right. And that, I think pre-marriage counseling is a perfect example, because I would guess very often the bride and groom are not in the same location as the church where they're going to get married, you know, students right off at college or whatever it may be, you know, and then you go back home to get married. So having that ability is surely a blessing, instead of having to squeeze those meetings in, maybe, you know, in times when they're both in town or whatever.
Yeah. Should note that along with Bible study, Ron Bilo from Wisconsin Lutheran College teaches, I believe he said, his calculus classes.
Mm-hmm. Or kind of alternates it.
Online, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's definitely a use. I think, obviously, in distance ed, you know, there's whole classes, not just select classes, which are taught online, but whole classes. And I think it's wise to bring in some video conferencing into those settings. So I could teach an entire class using something like Moodle or Google Classrooms or whatever it is, and just communicate in forums and, you know, non-face-to-face methods. But it is nice, even if it's not a requirement, to schedule in some FaceTime with those distance type education setting courses, and so that you do connect real time with the people. I took a class in the spring, and my teacher was actually in Korea, but he would meet with us. His time it was Saturday morning, our time it was Friday evening. And he would make sure and have time with us several times throughout the semester and really helped.
Yep. And then we had a bunch of other pieces of feedback on the distance confirmation concept. That seems to be one of the most popular uses. And I'd say we had a mix of Skype, Google Hangouts, and then other third-party tools. So it's not so much the tool. It's really the how it is that they're putting this together and what problem they're trying to solve. And I'd say there's not a big difference between those tools. So if you've got other suggestions, get into the listserv, throw in your two cents there, or let us know, and we'll include it in future community feedback shows.
Yep. There was more going on the listserv this month. Gail Potratz had posed a question about managing a cart of iPads. So you don't have iPads in a dedicated one-to-one scenario, but you share them using a cart or whatever. And Apple hasn't been the greatest at that. I think Google kind of took the lead with their Google Play management and stuff, and it was a little bit more difficult to use one iPad for multiple students. Jason Schmidt and Bob Martins both replied saying that with iOS 9 and Configurator 2, they've actually finally made it a lot easier for you to deploy apps directly to your iPads in a managed or cart situation without assigning an Apple ID. And you can assign apps to the machine rather than using an Apple ID. So definitely some good help out there on that topic. If that's a scenario you're considering with Apple devices, check out the listserv, and we'll have links to those comments and things in our show notes.
Very good. So we should move on to some other social channels that we heard some feedback on. One of those was Twitter. First one was an article from TechSmith talking about the differences between YouTube and Vimeo. And this is, I thought, very informative, because I get this question a lot. Well, which service should we use? Those are kind of the two main players. And they give kind of a blow-by-blow rundown of the pluses and minuses of each. On the Vimeo side, it's a more mature community of users. There is a paid version on Vimeo, which gives you some more features, more upload capabilities as well. On the Vimeo side, you can replace videos without losing your analytics and stats. One big difference is there are no ads on Vimeo whatsoever. And you do so also have some password protected options. On the YouTube side, you have a much broader audience, of course. I think you have more viewers on the YouTube side. They do have a free version, just like Vimeo does, but now they've added that YouTube Red that I talked about, I believe, last week, $10 a month for ad-free. So to get rid of the ads, you've got to pony up your $10. You can't replace videos on YouTube without destroying your analytical history. Again, the free version has a lot of ads. You can schedule release times. You have unlisted and private videos. I don't believe you have a password protected option on YouTube. And you do have a bunch of other differences here that they go through in this article, going step by step about copywriting, what the differences is, how they handle copyrighted material on each of the services, how analytics works, how privacy works. And at the end of the day, they said, well, where should I host? In the end, it really depends on the audience you're trying to reach, because both platforms offer great resources for businesses who are expanding into the world of digital video. My advice usually is, if you're just embedding video on your website, I would go with Vimeo because of the lack of ads. That's what we use on the Synod's website. We use Vimeo, although we still use YouTube as well. If you're looking to gain a broader audience and you want to find the most number of people, then YouTube is a good option as well. So,
So perhaps consider doing both, huh?
That's what we do, actually.
Different reasons.
Yep.
Sure.
We do both. And that adds a little bit of overhead, but it's not costing you much, if anything, to do that. So might not be a bad idea. And those are the big players. I don't know if I would consider any of the other players when we talk about that. Another Twitter article, and let me see if I can just pull this up as well. Was entitled Google Drive for Android and iOS gets notifications, file access requests, and previewing without an account. So what they've kind of done is they've taken all the things that you could do on the web and allowed you to do them on mobile devices, including notifications, requesting access. One of the things that is kind of challenging about using mobile is that mobile allows both Android and iOS, allows you to share content through different kinds of applications. And you don't always know if the person that you're sharing with has access to the content. So the ability to request access via mobile devices is actually a good thing. So here's a good article that talks a little bit about how that all works and some of the new features that are coming on both of those platforms.
Very good. I can jump in with a tweet that I shared this month, Martin. If I share my screen, you'll even see it. And it's an announcement of a Moodle MOOC, M-O-O-C, stands for Massive Open Online Course, that will be starting January 17th. So Moodle is an online learning platform. And if you're interested in learning how to teach with Moodle, they're going to offer this free course. I believe it's going to last 4 weeks, 3 to 4 hours a week, activity-based course. They're using open badges, so you can earn badges along the way and connect with others that are teaching on the Moodle platform. So no cost to you. Just head over to the link at learn.moodle.net and sign up for the course. It'll be starting on January 17th.
And the last item we're going to share on Twitter was one that I tagged called 6 Church Live Streaming Best Practices. You know, a lot of our churches are getting into live streaming. I take a lot of calls on that, talk to a lot of people and giving them some kind of counsel on how best to set up live streaming. Those 6 best practices are very common sense oriented. I would say if you just thought about it, it would make a lot of sense. Number one, always test before going live. So give yourself enough time there to make sure that you're online and you have the streaming going to the right location, that the audio is coming through, that kind of stuff. Best practice number 2, limit the access and usage of a computer used for streaming. So if you've got it the way you like it, don't let that computer get in the hands of other people who may install other stuff, may slow it down, may ultimately cause harm to the computer if you count on that computer day in and day out. So a dedicated computer for streaming is probably the best solution. Schedule adequate time, obviously makes sense. Give yourself enough time, get there early, do different, make sure that you've got enough time to test and then time after to get things all cleaned up. Best practice number 4, include the online audience as part of your service. So don't ignore the fact that you have people not sitting in your building joining the experience. So acknowledge maybe their presence, make them feel a part, welcome them. I thought that was a great point. Best practice number 5, focus in and get close-up shots of participants. So don't just point that camera, let's say, at the pastor, and you don't get the kind of the feel that there's somebody else a part of the service or whatever it is. So just make sure that you're pointing the camera at different locations, getting different people. And then finally, use social media to spread the word. So as you have opportunity, use things like Facebook, Twitter, whatever, to make sure people are aware that, hey, there's something live coming up, or when you go live, something live going on in real time. So lots
of opportunities. A couple of thoughts on that.
What's that?
I had a couple of thoughts on those tips. One was that oftentimes the live streaming software that you use makes it really easy to tweet or share on Facebook or whatever. It may take a little setup so that your accounts are connected, but just take advantage of the options that are there and share.
Livestream does that. Yeah, I would. I don't know if Final Web does that with theirs or not. Maybe they do.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have to go take a look. And then just one other thing, I kind of smiled as you were reading the tip about having the dedicated computer or, you know, the concept that somebody would sit down and change your settings or whatever. I was chatting with some organist friends of mine at church on Sunday, and there had been a wedding or something, and kind of an outside organist had played and changed all the stops on the organ. And so, you know, they deal with this as well with their realm of technology and in the organ world. And I can imagine that would be really difficult to sit down after you had everything just right and the stops be all different. So kind of relates.
Yep. No community feedback show would be complete without a Pinterest segment. I think I'll let Sally take that one.
Yeah, and I definitely have a cool infographic type thing worthy of Pinterest to share. Came across an article from Sylvia Talzano, I believe her name's right here, Talasano, who's a blogger at the Languages blog, and she recently presented on Sketch noting. And so you guys have seen these. We've actually talked about it in productivity book, project management book, I should say, that we're writing, that you could map out ideas and things using sketches or mind mapping software. This is particularly focused on representing maybe presentations or events, doing it for a lot of different things to kind of more clearly draw out different points that you want to make. And she had some tips around it. She had this excellent infographic that shared her tips, but there's also a blog post behind that that you could get to from that Pinterest link. And interestingly, she had her workshop participants try out sketchnoting, and she has a lot of their sketch notes posted here as well, which is kind of fun to see how different people do it and get into the techniques and things involved. She mentions in the blog post different tools, and I looked around a little, and I think one of the main tools that she features is Paper, which is a mobile app available for your phone or your tablet, and I believe that's what she did her presentation in, and she actually has her slide stack here, so you can slide share, you can watch all of the slides that were part of her presentation. So maybe a little creativity outlet for you to try out. I have a friend who regularly shares Bible verses and Bible study type sketch notes that she does just to be creative with the things she's learning in her Bible studying and things. So definitely visual communication is very popular and a great way to tell a story or share information. So maybe you want to check out that Pinterest pin. We'll have a link in the show notes.
That's cool. I see specific application, as we were talking last week in our book review or a book conversation about that project kind of jumpstart, that little one page, something you hand to the new project leader about how to get things set up, things that you need, things to, you know, what order things go in. I think that would be kind of cool to do it that way.
Definitely. Great idea. We wanted to make mention that we had an email from Rick Wilking, and hopefully I have it here. He's from Shepherd of the Valley in Westminster, Colorado, and he said that they're looking for ways to, or ideas for a promotional video for their congregation, and he wasn't really focused on the techie side of things, but more on planning and what type of shots to take and things like that. And that was an area that I didn't have a lot of information to share with him, Martin, from our Wells Tech conversations. I don't know that we focused on video content for a promotional video. So definitely wanted to make mention of it and ask our audience to to share their experience. If they've done demo videos, we'd love to get a link to those demo videos so we could share them just for people to get ideas from and things. So
yeah, a couple resources we've talked to on the show include Steve Zambo, Steve Betcher, those kinds of guys, I think, have provided that. I think Steve even has a video on, you know, lighting and, you know, camera angles, that kind of stuff. But I think this is a really great question, because you really want to think ahead about what the content is and do some storyboarding. We've talked a little bit about that in the past, and there are some good online tools for that too. You know, what is it you're trying to capture? What's the message and what's the sequence of events? So
definitely.
So move on to the DIGO section.
Yep, and the DIGO section, a lot of these were things that I came across recently and wanted to demo one in particular on my Google Calendar. And it's about deleted calendar events. If you accidentally delete a calendar event and it wasn't your intention. So I deleted an event, it's one click, there's no confirmation or anything. And I go, oh no, I didn't mean to delete that event. Now in the drop-down arrow next to the particular calendar the event was on, there is a trash link, which did not exist until very, very recently. So Google's given us the option to take a look at our trash, to find the event we didn't want to delete, and click restore. And when we go back to our calendar, we can see that that event is magically back on our calendar. So it's tucked away, not the easiest place to find it, but it could be a real lifesaver if you delete something from your calendar that you didn't intend to delete. Thanks, Google, for that enhancement.
Nice addition. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Next up, I got an email from our friends over at Church Mag. Martin, you and I talk a lot about Church Mag. They have a interesting addition to their icon these days, and that's because just today they announced that they had a celebration for their 15,000th blog post. You know, I think 419 podcasts is a lot, but 15,000 is a lot of blog posts, and we've learned a lot from their posting and things over at Church Mag. They're going to make it a real celebration, so if you head over to this link, they're going to celebrate for a while, and they're going to have information out on Twitter and Facebook and such, but they are going to have quite a few things to share with their audience. And the one that they shared so far is from a site called MoGive, which I wasn't familiar with, but it's an online mobile giving. And it says there's no sign-up fees, subscription fees, service fees, or contracts. So that sounds pretty appealing. Interestingly, the offer is that MoGive wants to give your church $100. And so perhaps for trying their service, I'm not really sure. I didn't dig in too deeply, but we'll include a link in the show notes, and you can check out MoGive if you're looking for an online mobile giving solution. Check out MoGive and see how you can capitalize on that $100 gift from MoGive. And I also tagged an article from the TechSmith blog. You had one earlier about comparing YouTube and Vimeo. This one is actually kind of walking you through closed captioning and why you might consider closed captioning, how many people are affected in the deaf community and appreciate and how the American with Disabilities Act even gives us guidelines to go by for closed captioning. And then there's some how-to kind of things to get started with closed captioning. Obviously, they have some tips for using their tools, Camtasia in particular, to add closed captioning. But they also talk about how you can do closed captioning with YouTube and Vimeo and things. So I know in the past have talked about closed captioning, but I think there's a real audience for gospel ministry to include closed captioning on videos that are being shared, and something you'd certainly want to consider. And this, I think, article is a real good overview of closed captioning.
Yep. I remember back in the day, John Shoesmith would come on and then come on the show and talk about new things that YouTube was making happen. I think it's really gotten even better than that since then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I think that's it for community feedback. Yes.
Yep, I believe so.
Okay. Just an encouragement to everybody that throughout our shows, do not wait for us to announce that we're having a community feedback show. Talk to us throughout. If you've got an idea or a question or some feedback on a particular show, just give us a shout out right away, whether that's on Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus or Digo or Pinterest, listserv, email wellstech@wells.net, or just a voicemail. Go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Click on the blue link on the right side and leave us a voicemail. We'd love to be able to play that. So keep the feedback coming. Makes this show possible, and I think that's it's good for everybody to share their thoughts and ideas like we did today. So very good. Sally, we have a little bit of news in tech, and that there is a new iPad, a big one, right?
That's right. The iPad Pro is out, and I've heard some really good things about it. It's definitely at a higher price point, although you can check out some of the articles that we'll include in the show notes to learn more. In this article in particular, they say more affordable than Microsoft Surface Pro 4. So they've got kind of the comparison chart and things there. And there's different reviews out there hearing really good things about it. Certainly a super high resolution screen to take advantage of doing some really exciting tablet-based things. So
yeah, they've improved a number of things. One, obviously, the size of the screen and the resolution. They've added the ability to use a pencil, electronic pencil, mm-hmm. With the product. Comes with a, well, it doesn't come with, you have extra for a keyboard.
Right.
It could be a laptop replacement. And it's probably priced like that as well. So it depends on whether you want to live in kind of an iOS world, because you really don't have an operating system other than iOS. That's probably one difference between that and, let's say, a Surface where you have a full operating system. But it could be a very useful tool for some situations. So take a look. They are available now in stores. I'm not sure about availability, but so if that's something that is of interest to you, take a look.
Definitely.
Wells Now is our next segment, and one of those things that maybe is kind of lost in the shuffle once in a while is a podcast, a very well-done podcast. It's actually both written, it's a devotion, both written and in audio format, called Our Military Devotions. And Pastor Ziemer, I believe he's still out on the East Coast, writes, mm-hmm. and then also, and I'm not sure if he writes all these or not, but I know he narrates them every week. So used by our military personnel, but the topics are, I think, very intriguing for almost anybody. So you don't have to be in the service per se to read these. But if you are in the service or have a family member who is in the service, these would be something you would definitely want to check out.
And I'm just checking out our Wells mobile app. And it is equipped with military devotions in both text and audio format as well. We also learned recently, to go along with the military devotions, that there's a new Lutheran military support group. And they have a brand new website. The website is LutheranMilitary.org. And you can learn more about it. There's an article from a recent newsletter that's posted on the Wells website that tells you details. And then you can certainly visit the site, LutheranMilitary.org, to get involved with it. So check those out.
Very nice. Yeah, they put a lot of effort into that, and great resources. So take advantage of that. Sally, I think that brings us to our Picks of the Week segment.
And I will go first, Martin, because I have something exciting to share that was, once again, Pinterest worthy. Came across a really awesome infographic from my friend Tony Vincent. You might remember Tony Vincent does the Learning in Hand lookbothways.com website, and he's very education focused with what you can do with all types of mobile devices. And most recently, he has posted on using a new app. I believe it was introduced this spring in March of 2015, called Periscope. Periscope was developed separately and then bought by Twitter. And so this is a Twitter thing, and it basically allows you to live stream from your mobile device. And I've installed Periscope and played with it a little on my phone. Also looked at a competitor called Meerkat, another mobile device live streaming app. And both of them, you know, you just very quickly set up an account and you can push a button and be live streaming just like that. So live streaming has come a really long way from when we started talking about it here on Wells Tech to now you can do it in the palm of your hand. Periscope, if you're watching my screen via the video link, is very capable of a lot, but Tony packed a lot into this infographic. There's a bit of a learning curve just to kind of wrap your brain around all the capabilities and how to use it effectively, what kind of things you might use it for, things like that. There's a social component to Periscope that allows you to have followers and you to follow other people and there to be notifications anytime you're broadcasting. Your followers will get a notification on their devices that you're broadcasting. They can send you comments during the broadcast, and also they can give you hearts or like what you're doing. So the more hearts you get, the more visibility your broadcast gets. So lots of capabilities there with Periscope. And like I said, there's Meerkat is another live streaming tool as well. I found links to compare Periscope and Meerkat, and also a link to something called Catch at katch.me. And if you add the Catch hashtag, it'll archive your video that you've broadcast. So with Periscope, your video is able to be archived. You can also download it to your device, but the online archive only stays there for 24 hours. So after 24 hours, it kind of disappears unless you use Catch, K-A-T-C-H, and have it archived kind of permanently there. Downloading to your device, then you could upload it to YouTube easily as well. So there's definitely ways to capture your video, kind of different options. And we'll have links to all these different things where you can learn more about Periscope if you start using it. We'd love to hear about how you use Periscope in your ministry setting. And that is my pick of the week.
Very nice. These have been, these services have just kind of emerged, and they're kind of their own little live streaming, you know, in a box kind of solution. Very easy to start, very easy to set up, almost kind of ad hoc. And one of the nice things about them, obviously, is you can immediately push it out to your social networks. People can log in and see your stuff. So
one advantage I read about Meerkat, and I did look at it a little as well, I installed it, was that you can schedule your live streams up to 24 hours in advance, which will give you a link that you can share with people when a live stream is coming up. So that I don't think exists in Periscope. I think it's just the real time, go live, push the button kind of thing.
Gotcha. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
My turn, and I'm going to talk about something I briefly mentioned last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, when we had Jason Schmidt on. So we were talking about a Nexus phone and a service that Google has made available called Project Fi. Project Fi is kind of a standalone service similar to what AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile or Sprint provide, except it's provided by Google. They've kind of created a deal with T-Mobile and Sprint where you can subscribe to the service or have your phone use this service called Project Fi, and at a actually at a very simple and low rate. So I've been trying this for about the last month, and actually I'm liking it a lot. They use Sprint and T-Mobile, both of them, as their cellular service. So whichever is the stronger signal, you'll grab. So you'll have to kind of figure out whether those services are okay for you. If not, then maybe this wouldn't be the greatest service. But one of the neatest things about it is that you can use calling over Wi-Fi. So if you are in a location, maybe it's your classroom or your school or your church office, whatever, it doesn't get great reception. If you have Wi-Fi, it really doesn't matter what your reception is. You can use your phone, you know, in that scenario. So our Synod office here is kind of a real dead zone. You know, very few phones work inside of our building. So this has been a great boon for me using this service, where as long as I'm my phone's connected to Wi-Fi, I can make and receive very clear cellular calls. One of the other nice things about it is the mobile app itself allows you to, and let me just pull it up here. Oops, wrong one. The mobile app itself is very easy to understand. It tells you exactly how much data you've used. So what you do is you pay $20 a month for just the basic service, unlimited text and talk, and then you pay $10 per gigabyte. So my initial sign up was for 3 gigabytes, so I'm paying $50. And then it gives you kind of a running total of how much you are using. So for instance, I'm kind of halfway through my month and I haven't used a gigabyte yet. The neat part about this with other plans is, yeah, you'd pay for 3 gigabytes, but if you didn't use it, you'd lose it. With Google Fi or Project Fi from Google, you get that refunded to you. So if I only use 1 gigabyte and I paid for 3 gigabytes, I'm going to get a $20 rebate. So it's not just a rollover thing like you get with some other services. It's a money back in your pocket kind of thing. So you pay as you go. So very simplified. There are some downsides to it. As I mentioned, the Sprint and T-Mobile side, if you don't get good reception with those services, although I've had very good luck with it so far. I drove out to New Ulm a week and a half ago, had service almost all the way. You know, back and forth to my commute is pretty good. So that can be one downside. The other downside is there is no family plan for this. So it's really best if you are kind of standalone. So you could get a plan for $30. Yeah, you know, would be the lowest. So you'd have $20 for the service for talk and text, and then, you know, 1 gigabyte. And then if you go over, it's pretty much the same as you'd pay for an extra gigabyte, something like that. But if you do have kind of a family scenario, so you have 3 or 4 people, this probably wouldn't be a great plan for you. But if you're kind of on your own, this might be worth looking into. Or even if there's maybe 2 of you and you don't use a lot of data, it's really simple to set up. And there's no long-term contract. That's another benefit. So you can get off of it, pause the service, put in another SIM, go on your AT&T or Verizon network, and come back to the service if you want. Your number is portable, so that's kind of a nice feature of it. So you can use a Google Voice number. You can port over your existing number. So it acts just like a regular phone service. And there are some international plans, so the rates apply to international as well. So that's one of the appealing things. If you have travel needs, this would be something where you wouldn't have to call up the company and say, hey, I'm traveling, give me a special, you know, whatever it is, 100 megabytes for $100 kind of thing. This comes along for the ride. So I've been real happy with it so far. I've only, again, used it for, you know, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, but probably worth looking at if those things meet your needs.
Yeah, we have 3 on our family plan, and I'm thinking that might be cheaper even with the family plan.
Could be, depending on your data needs, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
They don't provide you can use your phone as a hotspot with this as well, so you get that advantage too. So.
Okay. It's all about the coverage map.
Then. Yep, that is my pick of the week. Let's go on to ministry resources. We're coming up on Christmas, so we want to maybe let people know about Advent by Candlelight, right?
Yeah, from the Wells Women's Ministry website. They have a whole lot of resources dedicated to Advent by Candlelight, a very popular service to host with your women's groups in particular. They have hostess guidelines, bulletin and newsletter articles, as well as a lot of service programs and things that you can use in your congregation setting. So tons of them here to download, lots of really nice Advent-oriented themes to select from. And I would say it's not too late to plan an Advent by Candlelight event and check out these resources. So we will include a link in the show notes, and we thank our women's ministry group for putting that together for us.
Very nice. Sally, we do have a featured video this week, 30 seconds of Google.
We do, and it's actually 41 seconds, so I'm not quite sure about their title there, but it's very quick.
You think Google would be good at math, but maybe not.
it's a really nice alternative use for Google Slides. So oftentimes we want to be able to be creative for things like bulletins, for instance, where we're really kind of looking for something like a publisher type tool that would allow us to put content wherever we want it to be, not really be constrained in any way. And actually, Google Slides as well as PowerPoint, those types of tools actually work that way, where the content is very free form, or can be. You can put images where you want them and size them and different things. So the gist of this 41 second video is showing you how to change the aspect ratio of your slides, because you know typically slides are going to be like 4x3 or 16x9 so that they look good projected on a screen. But if you want to use it for like an 8.5x11 sheet of paper kind of aspect ratio, you got to find that right sweet spot in Google Slides to make that change. If you watch this video very quickly, you will know how to make that change, and then basically you'll unlock the capability of using your Google Slide files as publisher type files, desktop publishing, with all kinds of flexibility. So that's what the video is all about. We're adding it to our presentation and teaching videos playlist over on YouTube, and we'll have it embedded in the show notes at wellstech.wells.net.
It's amazing what you can learn in 40 some odd seconds.
That's right.
It's very informative. Next week, I'm excited to welcome back Gail Potratz, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. We're going to be talking about a day in the life of a tech director. Gail is one of those, and I know a lot of our listeners fit that description as well. I think anybody who is kind of the go-to person in a congregation would benefit from our conversation about what's it like to be a tech director, and maybe some tips, tricks, experiences that we probably all had and could share. And I'm looking forward to the conversation. So come back next week as we open up the conversation with Gail.
I'm guessing that there are probably congregations and schools out there that don't have anybody in that go-to position that could learn what they need and how that position can benefit their congregations and schools
as well. It can be very rewarding, too. I think there's certainly a blessing to that. So, well, that's, I think, going to do it for the show, Sally. Thanks to all of you for tuning in once again. We couldn't do it without you, especially these community feedback shows. And we hope that you will offer your feedback as we go forward. And more than that, we hope that you will join us for show number 420 coming up next week. Thanks, everybody. Have a blessed week, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.